The country of Jordan is going to spend $120 million to develop a project to commemorate the baptism of Jesus by 2030. Now, this will surround Al-Maghtas, which is also known as Bethany beyond the Jordan. It's the site on the eastern bank of the Jordan River, traditionally identified as the place where John the Baptist baptized Jesus. Now, this is intended to be completed, like I said, in 2030, which Jordan and Christian leaders plan to commemorate as the 2000th anniversary of Christ's baptism. Plans are extensive. It includes a $50 million museum devoted to the baptism, a $40 million village for pilgrims and visitors, $27 million in roads, water, energy, and other infrastructure, and a $3 million ecological corridor designed to preserve something of the landscape that characterized the area in antiquity. Now, Jordan, the state, hopes that the development will eventually attract as many as 1 million visitors annually. Now, for Christians, the baptism marks the beginning of Jesus' public ministry, and it's a foundational event, obviously, in the gospel. The site also has significance, though, in the Islamic world, because Jesus and John the Baptist are both revered as prophets in Islam. Even though baptism in and of itself is not a ritual, and this event is not recounted in the Quran, still, the landscape belongs to the sacred shared history. But this location also occupies extraordinarily consequential geography. Jordan's Al-Maghtas lies on the sovereign side of the river, but directly across it is Qasr al-Yahud, which is another traditional baptismal location, but it is in the Israeli-occupied territory of the West Bank. So this is not just a religious event, it is a geopolitical one, and it raises questions such as, this will be an event, a location for Muslims and Christians. How will Israel allow this to go forward? What does Jordan hope to accomplish through this international pilgrimage in a Muslim land? How should we understand this importance? And what is the role of the church here? Because as you see, the Catholic Church is assisting in this project, but Palestinian Christians living only miles away have endured bombardment, displacement, genocide, attacks on their churches, and local Catholic institutions have failed to provide any meaningful assistance. Vatican diplomacy has plainly failed to secure their protection. So what do we make of this? Well, joining me to discuss today is John Hears. He's the founder of First Things Foundation. He also has been on humanitarian trips around the world in Georgia, Haiti, Appalachia, Central America, East and West Africa. He's also the author of Three Souls, an ancient upside down love triangle. Thank you so much for joining me.
What the heck? I'm so happy to be able to speak with you. We're out here trying.
Been a long time coming.
We're out here trying to do crazy stuff, and then I get an invitation to talk about this and global politics, and I'm thankful.
Well, let's start with the significance of a huge event like this with Muslims and Christians together. You know where I'm going with this. Mm-hmm. We are in a war now that is essentially trying to divide Muslims and Christians. Christians are not typically told that Jesus has significance in Islam. So what do you make of this in this point in time?
So when I first saw this, I thought about the nature of pilgrimage. And it made me think of Western society and how we've lost track of what that is. And then I realized that there are a lot of people who did not forget what that is, which is including beyond just a spiritual event, it's an economic event. Yeah. But most importantly, and we can go through the history, which is really fascinating. What it says, this article to me, as a person who's traveled and seen sort of the Muslim world, the Christian world, and as an Orthodox Christian, what it says is something like, is Jordan is trying to position themselves as one who understands Christians. And especially Eastern Christians and Catholics, Western and Catholic Christians who have never let go of the idea of the imminent Christ in things, the Holy Spirit in things. And that's what a pilgrimage is. If you and I go on one, Natalie, it's because we think there's something special about that stone that's not the same as the other stone or the other piece of wood or the other, you know, human bone. That human bone means more than another human bone. And this is a very Christian idea going all the way back. And I think the Jordanians are saying something like, we understand you and have always understood you and are willing to invest in this thing, as opposed to the Israelis, who are playing a little harder at the geopolitical game and really trying to expand and care less about this. Well, and that's my first take. That's my first take.
Right. And so we see now that Israeli foreign policy is to divide, is to continue anti-Islam rhetoric in Western countries. We've seen, in fact, leaked public relations plans where Israel's putting a lot of money into telling Christians the Muslims are the enemy. They don't believe what you believe. They That's are right. separate and, about, and a, apart. They are extremists. We are not. You're not. Judeo-Christianity right. is where we are aligned. Can you speak specifically to that theology, please? Because sure. it's something that I'm just starting to understand myself.
No, and I love watching you grapple with it. It makes my day. Because I see you doing it. And I just want you to know something. I became aware of sort of, let's call it Eastern Christianity, the Orthodox, 30 years ago and converted. What's happened slowly is as the new world, sort of the materialistic, let's just, I don't say that in a negative way. It's understanding life as material, sort of the atheistic evolutionary model. As that model has lost its vigor, you know, the Richard Dawkins of the world are less important now. What's happening is these old ideas in Christianity are coming to the surface. And when you say theological, it's perfect. These are theological conversations that have always been had. But for the last 200 years, the Protestant voice has been dominant because in general, it's been easily integrated with the materialistic voice or the secular voice. And the secular voice and the Protestant voice have been intertwined. And no offense, but the Israeli government, not Jews per se, the Israeli government is very aware of their relationship to that Protestant voice, that material voice, that very modern Protestant voice. And that voice, the Protestant theology on pilgrimage, is silent. In other words, there's no real conversation in the Protestant world about going on pilgrimage to kiss a bone of a dead guy. That's a weird thing. And the Israeli policy is to unite and ally with that kind of Protestant thinking. The Orthodox and the Catholics less so, the mystical conversation is really important. But yes. Let me put it differently. There's the Holy Spirit in stuff. And so you have to take seriously a holy site. Like, you have to take seriously the idea that I'm going there in order to bend down and pray in this spot. And that won't die. That will not die in the East. The Orthodox will never, ever get rid of that. And I think what you just said is really important, is that Israeli policy doesn't like that mystery, that mystical voice as a part of its plan, because it foils modern, let's call it rational logic. And the Zionists, above all else, are rationalists. They're modern people trying to build a modern place that is about power and glory and hope and for this world. But a Christian viewpoint that allows you to go kiss the bones of a dead person, this is very odd in the modern world. And it's not consistent with the powers of the last 200 years, if that makes any sense.
Well, what do you think Christians should understand about Muslim reverence for Jesus?
So I lived in a Muslim village in West Africa for 2.5 years, and everybody said what you just said constantly. You know, we love what? Jesus. You know, we love Jesus.
Uh-huh.
All the time. And then, of course, I was sort of returning to my Christian roots in the 90s, and like, who am I? I was Episcopalian, and I'm very thankful for what I was given. But I was like, yeah, but it's not quite the same. And so if you say these words with any Muslim anywhere, you know, well, Christ is God, then it's going to cause a problem. It's not going to cause a violent problem. It could in a geopolitical, if some political power, if some state whips those people up or whips the Christians up, you'll get violence. But my neighbors would just say, yeah, maybe, but also that sounds a little blasphemous, and let's have some food.
Okay.
And let's sit together. It would cause a rub, but the reverence for Christ is that he was a revelation. He was one of the prophets on the way to Muhammad. And so he's in the line of all that which is good and not to be rejected. And so what can I say is in my own personal life and even now overseas with our projects, when we work with Muslims in West Africa and East Africa, I would say this is there is a natural ability to be together on that level. Now, what about a true, let's say, a true Orthodox Jew? They can't say that. That's not like Jesus is just an outlier.
Yes.
He can't be accepted in the same. In other words, it's a little less, it's not quite as soft a pillow to land on if you're talking to a true believer in the Jewish tradition. So I think that plays in, Natalie. I think it really plays in on the big picture right now in Middle Eastern politics. I think that plays in. And I think Muslims do have an easier conversation, but I don't want to soft pedal that either. There's been a lot of persecution of Christians throughout really Muslim history, starting with the fall of Jerusalem in the 600s. It's not all like, bubbles and roses and unicorns. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot going on there.
Surely not. Right. It's been a long and bloodied history, but it has always been promoted by the elites. It's not necessarily, you read about Portugal's struggle to get around the Cape and their wars in Goa and, capturing Muslim slips the ships and, all of this was funded by the crown and the church.
That's right.
They used to do something called mer than boca, which means poo in mouth, where they would like defile their religion specifically
That's
by
right.
making them eat their own poo.
That's
If we're, how did we get here? Sorry.
right.
But
That
there's,
made my
yes,
day.
I think for the most part, average working class believers don't have this. It's fed to us. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, I think, listen, you and I could find a difference right now. And if there was a really talented, let's call this person a divider, they could divide us right now, or we could be unified through a proper third party. Like anytime there's a third party, they have the choice whether to lean into the things that are same or the things that are different. We do this thing called KP. This actually fits. I want to tell you about this.
Okay.
The Georgians from the East, so they're Orthodox Christians. By the way, this is really important because they have a presence in Jerusalem as well. And one thing everybody should know that's listening, and depending on what you know, I mean, you could check, but every sort of Christian, let's call it institution, for lack of a better word, they have a presence, including the Protestants, including the evangelicals, have a presence in the Holy Land. There's some sort of presence. There's some sort of they're repping something. And the Georgians do too. And they have this dinner called the Supra. And they have this, the leader of the dinner is called a Tamada. And I'll tie this in. And I'm one of those. I've inherited this. It's an oral tradition. And the Tamada is said to do one thing, is to make a toast that unites the table on a level that's higher than the mundane. In other words, we could all be united by the fact that, I don't know, we're all wearing a brown shirt. Or we could be united by the fact that we all feel pain and suffering. And then the toast would be to something like how we go through the suffering together. In other words, we're united in that toast. Well, the history of this location that the Jordanians are trying to protect or manipulate, depends how you look at it. The history of that place is that Christians have gone on pilgrimage there in order to become the Tamada, the one who unites humanity and not the one who divides it. Now, someone's going to go, that's not true, the Crusaders. So we can go over this history because it's fascinating. The Crusaders were definitely a divisive force, right, in the 1100s when they arrived. What people need to understand is they were arriving to try to reclaim what had been Christian for 400 years. After Christ's death, you have a whole series of hermits going into the countryside there in the, by the Jordan River. And these hermits are following in the ways of Saint John the Baptist, who was preparing the way for Christ. And this movement, we call it the monastic movement in history, were the first Christians trying to make sense out of what it means to live in a world and believe in a God-man or believe in a resurrected God, which is a very weird idea, right? It's
Sure.
a resurrected God. That means your God died. This is very odd in history. But these hermits, who right there along the Jordan, they built tiny cells, and then in and around the cells, they built tiny churches, and they were persecuted by the Romans, early on persecuted by the traditional Jews. Then the Jews were persecuted by the Romans, and then you have a whole series of persecuted Christians that ends with St. Helen in the late 300s or the early 300s, 313. And St. Helen, the mother of Constantine, if you guys know Constantine out there, Constantine is the one who says to the whole world, basically, Christians are free to worship. His mother was an Orthodox Christian, and she went to the Holy Land to validate the very place that the Jordanians right now are trying to recover with, or trying to build all these improvements. So,
Commemorate, right.
yeah, to commemorate. So, what's really fascinating is Helen goes there to validate. And what she finds is local communities, many of them still bearing the scars of persecution throughout the 100, 200, and 300s. She gets there and sees these local communities and said, "Show me where Christ was baptized." And they took her. "Show me where the cross was buried." And they took her. "Show me where we find the martyrdom of Saint Stephen." And they took her. And then because she was the mother of the emperor, she started funneling money there. And from 313 until the middle 600s, you have Christians operating freely and building all the places that we now go on pilgrimage to see. When a bunch of evangelicals get on a plane to fly to Israel, they're going to see the places that St. Helen, right,
Right.
commemorated and dedicated all this money and time to.
Yeah.
The Muslims come in 637, and the Orthodox patriarch comes and greets them and says, "Please don't destroy our holy sites. We will allow you to be the political ruler of this region." And thus begins Muslim rule. And Muslim rule is a whole variation. It's a variation on, at times they help build the holy sites for 1,000 years, at times they help to destroy them. And the Crusaders are going back to say, "Yeah, you don't get to rule this anymore. We rule it." But there's a whole bunch of politics involved. So, to bring that all around to the Tamada, every Christian on pilgrimage is trying to recover Christ through seeing the beautiful places, through seeing the holy sites where actual spiritual history was made. And so, we should always move toward unity and love for brother, not toward division, right, and love of power. And I personally think most governments are trying to do the latter, but we Christians have to just stand steadfast and go on pilgrimage. And so that's one way I see this Jordanian move is to capitalize on the kind of conversation I'm having with you right now, the kind of Christian thought that says something like, "Come and join and not divide." But yeah, you don't trust politicians. I've seen you in Clayton. I know you don't. I don't either.
I just want to take a quick break before we move on to tell you about Rumble Wallet because they're sponsoring this portion of the show. So, if you're watching us on Rumble and you want to get our attention fast, well, there's an easy way to do it with Rumble Rants through Rumble Wallet. So, if you have questions or comments and there's something you really want us to respond to, this goes for all Rumble creators as well, you can launch a rant through Rumble Wallet. And more of the money that you're sending actually goes where you want it, the creators like Redacted, that you would like to support. So for a limited time, you can start your wallet with just $10 in US stablecoins. For tipping Rumble creators like Redacted and our cohorts of creators as well, you can get this $10 with our promo code REDACTED10 when you sign up. So scan the QR code on your screen or go to wallet.rumble.com. Make sure you use the promo code REDACTED10. Again, that's REDACTED10 to claim $10 in US stablecoin for tipping your favorite Rumble creators. So check it out for yourself using Rumble Wallet. Restrictions apply. And of course, there are a number of entries that are limited. So check it out as soon as you can. Terms and conditions apply. See the description below or visit rumble.com/promo official rules for details. Rumble Wallet, a great place to get started. Okay, I can understand what you're saying about the state of Jordan. Why would they do this? Of course, much the same way Spain, Portugal, and France will make money from the pilgrimage that runs across through their borders, exactly. The Camino de Compostela, the same way that, you know, there's money in having the Vatican and Fatima and all of these places, right? So we don't begrudge the local economies for wanting something like this. Fine. For sure. But the Catholic Church, I'm struggling with its role here because, like I said, you know, in a short distance away, they have Christians being persecuted in the West Bank and have largely failed to do much about it, to speak loud enough, in my opinion, about it. And then they're like, but over here, it's going to be pretty great. How can you reconcile that?
It's like watching Bishop Barron on the Religious Fairness Equality Commission. That's the one where I forget the name of the Catholic woman. She refused to sort of play ball with that Trump commission.
Oh, yes. Carrie something.
Yes, Carrie. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, Bishop Barron, probably the most well-known American Catholic bishop. And by the way, this is no shade at Catholics. He kind of threaded the needle through all that. And he sort of was strategically silent. That's fine. I get it. Life's hard. There's always the power behind the power. And I think the Catholic Church right now is watching to try to figure out exactly how far they can go in the Middle East.
What does that mean? Like, to what end?
Yeah. I would say this, that the Catholic folks that I've broken bread with, both in the hierarchy and just regular everyday people, they are not trying to side with the Israeli government, Netanyahu. Mm-hmm. I think, though, unlike the Orthodox, they haven't been in the fights in the Middle East for the last 1,000 years. The Orthodox, of which I'm one, those patriarchs and those bishops and those priests, they have been the dhimmi, the protected underclass. Once the Ottomans came, for folks that in history, just think of it as one of the many Muslim groups that have ruled various places in the Middle East. They were probably the most powerful for the longest period of time. Once they came, they established certain communities. They allowed for certain communities outside of Islam to flourish, semi-flourish, or not flourish at all. And they picked and chose depending on the power necessary at the time. Greek Christians, Orthodox Christians, were protected and then not protected back and forth. And so the Orthodox in the Middle East have a very different understanding of what a Muslim is. And I think the Catholics are less familiar with how that all works. And they're fundamentally less familiar with also how Israeli politics has combined with Orthodox politics. And so I personally think the Catholics, they want what the Orthodox want. They're not as wise and insightful as per how the things work, because we Orthodox have been under the yoke of Islam and now Israel for a long, 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 long time. And so I see the Catholics running.
I'm having
it like
a hard time. You know, I think it was within the last year, maybe 18 months, there was a Catholic church bombed in Gaza. And it wasn't even the Pope himself that released a statement. It was a deputy. And I don't understand the way that the Catholic Church has sat on its hands in the last 3 years. And, you know, just the occasional tweet by the Pope. And I appreciate that you're not wanting to just take a full swing at them. And neither of us are Catholic, so we shouldn't do that. I just want to understand is it politics? Is it cowardice? Is it, what is it really?
I think it's too much guile. So for me and for you too, I love you guys, what you do. I like to say the truth and then get punched in the face for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because it's not going to come easy, you know?
Sure.
You're not going to be able to say the truth and everyone's going to gather around and give you flowers.
Well, the Bible commands you to speak your truth and pay the consequences.
Yes, I know. This is the Christian way. For me, Catholic hierarchy is always generally political, one notch too heavy. They kind of go to 11 on politics for me.
Yeah.
We have that too in the Orthodox Church. But let's play the devil's advocate, which is not a great idea, but let's do it.
Let's do it.
What would a hierarch in the Catholic Church do? Like, what would it look like? Like, I have a few ideas. Let's play around. Would it be some statement at the UN? Those aren't worth much.
Right.
Forgive me if I curse. Sometimes I curse. I almost said a dirty word right there.
Merd, but it was a Portuguese
word. You did say merd. But then you said merd in your mouth, which really doubled down on the whole concept. I loved it. So there's some sort of statement that could be made. Maybe the Pope does this or that. I personally think it looks like this. This is what I would hope. But again, I'm a hypocrite because I'm not over there doing it. I have other work right now. But I think it literally looks like walking into armed situations and being arrested and or shot at. I actually think that's what it looks like. And I'm not talking about some progressive parade. I'm talking about where those people, the beautiful people who see the truth, they walk right up to the guns and put flowers in them. Like, I think there needs to be more of that. I think the Pope should be take his sandals off, take a walk. Like, I think that's what it should look like. I think Gaza should have a ring around it of people willing to do such a thing. And I think the West Bank the same. And I think all of this, I really do. It's easy for me to say. I'm sitting in my little house, whatever this studio is. So that's my call out, but I'm a hypocrite.
Well, okay. How do these ideas get born? If you go and get shot, then, the idea is not born, but I understand what you're saying.
Wait, Natalie. I think that might be exactly how the idea is born. In the history of Christian martyrdom, it's number one, which is it's the blood is the seed of renewal. The blood of the martyrs is what plants the seed of resurrection and redemption. So I personally think it is that. It's a take on Jefferson, right? The tree of liberty needs to be watered with the blood of the martyrs. That's a little different because the tree of liberty is sort of a political institution in the end. I don't really know what that is. It's not a Christian phrase to me. But we Christians know that you have to risk stuff like blood. So I'm not saying you're wrong, but I am. Like, maybe some people do need to die. And they are, by the way.
Yes. Yes. The problem is we are increasingly desensitized to it. So we know now that it is both Muslims and Christians being slaughtered in the West Bank and Gaza. And we do nothing. We, except talk about it. We can feel it. We can commiserate on it. But beyond that, and so that's why I'm just struggling to, how do we view this project?
Right.
This pilgrimage project, is it an attempt to say, hey, those of us over here, we're united, like Muslims and Christians together, so we don't need to have this war with, the state of Israel as the wedge between us, or is it more political than that? And we don't know. We don't. But at the same time, this is a very expensive project, just a stone's throw from misery, and that also feels a bit Hunger Games. And so, again, I'm just looking at this like, what could this possibly accomplish? What could this otherwise do? What are we being invited to feel or see? And is it helpful in any way?
So I'm bad. This is, I love this conversation. I don't know how much time we have, but I love this conversation. So I'm bad at figuring out the dark. Like, do I think there's a dark element in this? Yeah, I think there's always a dark element in the way that states play with holy sites. You know, the whole red heifer thing and the rebuilding the temple is volatile stuff. Like, it's
Yes.
dangerous stuff. It's real, and I don't trust any of these politicians on our side or on their side to get that right. I think they're manipulative. However, the people in the light, I count you guys as one of these. I try to be, which is just saying the thing they believe and then trying to act on the thing they believe. You know, like there's no guile. Like, I just want to go pilgrimage. I love Jesus.
Sure.
Like, I love those people. I try to be, and those people, they are interested in this magnificent, crazy concept of veneration, of reaching out to things and places that are holy and honoring them. And I like whatever side wants to support those people. And it's like Mother Teresa used to say, and a lot of other saints, it was, I don't. Because remember, they would yell at her. Like, she would get money from like Papa Doc in Haiti or some crazy dictator. They would give her $5 million to ease their conscience, and they would say, "Better of it than he does. At least I can save sick people in my ward. Like, what do you care about that? Like, God needs him to give his money away too." I just like that. I like that kind of brutishness. I like that kind of simplicity where it's really clear and out there. And but boy.
Sure. But the intention of the pilgrimage very much matters
I
to
agree. I
everyone
agree.
who takes it, and there was no one who would ever say that a Buddhist or a Jew could not also take the pilgrimage. It would be for everybody. And so, right?
Well, so absolutely. You want to, can I tell you what I think the deeper, so there's all these layers. And you could see him in history. You can see him on our podcasts. You can, then there's this underlying crazy mystery. And this is the one I see playing out, which I think is exciting and also very interesting, is I think this idea that Jordan would invest in a pilgrimage site and the idea that people want to make sure the Holy Land is protected, I think this is a reemergence of an ancient way of seeing the world. It's a reemergence of people like me and you, Westerners, you know, dipped in the Harvard scholarly worldview or whatever in our rationalism. It's suddenly a twist on why would anyone go kiss a dead bum? I don't get it. And I see the deepest layer is something like there's a fissure in the modern world where the politics are important, but if you look deep, people are returning and or adopting a way of seeing the world that is profoundly mystical. And that is how I read this article. And that's how I see this development. That's how I hope to see it. I get drawn back into the everyday. But I think there's something happening, Natalie. And I think it goes along with UFOs. Like, how do you get a whole bunch of people suddenly believing in UFOs? There's definitely a spiritual element there. Tucker talks about it as demons, so does the Orthodox Church. You're like, really? We're gonna have a conversation? That's happening? That's not happening in modern America. You're like, that's happening. And when that starts to happen, everything's up for grabs because we have not thought like this as a nation and as a Western society for 200 years. I
Yes,
know.
I think you're quite right. I didn't, this sort of secularization of our belief system, I didn't see it as a Protestant movement. Maybe I don't quite understand what that is. So why don't we take a quick break and you can explain to me what that is? We want to tell you about our friends at Ethos because life insurance is one of those things you may not want to think about, but you really should, especially if you have a family. This is something we're really intentional about in our family, making sure that if something goes wrong, the people that we love wouldn't suddenly be left trying to figure everything out financially and also taking care of our kids. That's why I love how simple Ethos has made the whole process. Ethos makes getting life insurance fast and easy and is 100% online. You can get a quote in seconds, apply in minutes, and potentially have same-day coverage. There's no medical exam. You just answer a few simple health questions online, and you can get up to $3 million in coverage, with some policies as low as $30 a month. So take 10 minutes and get covered today with life insurance through Ethos. Get your free quote at ethos.com/redacted. That's ethos.com/redacted. Protect your family with life insurance from Ethos, and of course, get peace of mind. Get up to $3 million in coverage in as little as 10 minutes. Once again, that's ethos.com/redacted. And of course, application times may vary and rates may vary too. We also want to tell you about Century H2O, because you know what's wild? We spend all this extra money on organic food or clean beauty products, air purifiers, but the water we're drinking, cooking with, and even showering with every day, well, most of us assume that it's fine. But depending on where you live, testing has found things like PFAS, that's forever chemicals, chlorine, fluoride, arsenic, heavy metals in drinking water supply. Just because your water meets the local government standards doesn't mean that it's free of contaminants, and you may not want it in your body. Well, that's why we love Century H2O. They don't take a one-size-fits-all approach. They offer whole home filtration, reverse osmosis drinking water systems, water softeners, as well as water treatment. Now, their systems can help reduce unwanted contaminants, improve the taste of your water, and help prevent hard water scale buildup that can affect your pipes and your appliances. Plus, their team will actually help figure out which system makes the most sense in your home instead of just selling you something that you don't need. So get your free consult. Visit centuryh2o.com/redacted to find the system that's right for you. Plus, you can save 10% with the promo code redacted. So again, check it out for yourself. See what would fit in your home. centuryh2o.com/redacted and use the promo code redacted for 10% off. Clean water isn't a luxury. It's something every family deserves. One more time, that's centuryh2o.com/redacted. Okay, before the break, we talked about the Protestant ethos that moves us away from the mystical, from the spiritual, from the things we cannot see. Maybe even we could call it magical if we wanted to. And you intimated that possibly that was intentionally woven into the fabric of American society. Maybe I'm extrapolating too far. Mm-hmm. What do you think of what I've just summarized, and can you explain it?
So, number one, I just want to say this, because I'm trying to be a Thomas, trying to be this guy that unifies. Christ, I think, is real. Christ is present. And if someone accepts Christ into their heart, that's sort of evangelical language, that's a good thing.
Right. And then I will just interject what I think is that for hundreds of years, religion has been perverted to co-opt power for specific aims. So that's what I'm getting at right now. So someone could be a fantastic Protestant and also not understand the power structures at work.
100%. By the way, no doubt that religious institutions and leaders are co-opted all the time. That's right? The Gospels talk about this all the time.
Yeah.
So what I want to point out that I think is fascinating, and I think it's an emerging idea. So how you teach, say, who Christ is or what the church is, what I see is that it matters, and here's what I mean. Sola Scriptura is a way of seeing, right, who Christ is through only sola, through the scriptures. So, okay, that's fine. That's a way for you and me, if we so choose, to know God. Let's just say that is a way. But if you look carefully at the historical time period, Luther's 1500s, you've got the printing press, you also have the Renaissance, and what's really important is you have the Enlightenment in the 1600s, 1700s. And all of those movements are trying to rationalize and demystify a very mystical, let's call it, medieval world. So if you just stick with me for 1 second on this, what's being born out of the Lutheran conversation, the 1500s and into the 1600s, is this sola scriptura idea that if you just read and pray, Christ is found in the book. That's fine. But reading takes a certain type of intellect. No offense, but where we work, the hills of Guatemala and West Africa, Sierra Leone. By the way, we work in the town where Ebola started and where the Civil War started. This is not a way of being. Like, well, it started to now. Now I would say it's coming. But, you know, 50 years ago in that village, nobody was like, I become a better person because I learn how to read. It's weird. Mm-hmm. Reading's just it's a skill. It's like, I don't know, I'm a woodworker. Does that make me a better person? I don't know. I work with wood. And so what happens is the skill of reading becomes necessary for your salvation, if you think about it. And what is the skill of reading? It's decoding, right? It's rational decoding of symbols. It's math on some level. And the more math you do, the more logical your mind must become in order to be good at doing more and more math. And so what's happened is the West, in emphasizing salvation through the decoding of a book, has made a type of mind. We've become a type of mind, a mind that sees, decodes, and rationalizes our meaning. We turn meaning into a rational event. And that's fine. I'm cool with that. That builds stuff. Rational people build stuff. Engineers build stuff. The problem is in building all this stuff, we've sort of, destroyed is a strong word. We've sort of unscrewed all the mystical stuff. And so we've come to a place where swinging incense is unnecessary for your salvation, but reading a book is. That's super dangerous. It's also not very Christian, because for 1500 years, to read was not a, it didn't, wasn't a, a demarcation of your spiritual goodness. No one could say to most 90% of people for 1,000 years, did you read the Bible last night? Nobody could read. So if you think about that, how did Christianity exist without an overwhelming ability to read scripture? And that was through the mystical practice of the liturgy, of the Christian liturgy. It was through entering into the doors of the church, not into the pages of the book. Of course, what happened inside the doors of the church is you heard the Bible chanted aloud with incense and priests. So what I'm trying to get at is I'm not trying to pick on anybody. We've become the kind of practitioners of Christianity that we needed to become in order to believe the Bible. And I think those are rational modern people. I have no problem with that. But that's not a lot of the world. And that doesn't make the other part of the world bad. It just makes them not sola scriptura Protestant Christians, if that makes any sense.
Right. And I want to talk about the idea of understanding the mystical or being open to the mystical. You know, the Pope is an Augustine, and they tend to be very mystical. And is that something that's actually been brought into Catholicism? I don't think we know yet, because the Pope is new. But at the same time, Christians, you know, before they could read, were still outsourcing sort of magical processes. I don't know. Are you familiar with the Tretia Maria tablet? It's this super fun story where, like, these curse tablets were found somewhere between 43 and 410 AD. And it basically showed that Christians would go to their priest and say, I need to curse somebody, but I can't read or write, so you're going to do it for me. Sure. This one is, I wonder if I can find a picture to put on the screen. This one is especially, you know, venomous, because it's someone who asked her priest to type out, like, you know, on a tablet, said, I curse Tretia Maria and her life and mind and memory and liver and lungs mixed up together, and her words, thoughts, and memory. Thus she may be unable to speak what things are concealed. So this was like, we believed at one point that we had the power to seek revenge, and that the mystical was real and we could ask for it, right? And so, yes, there was at one point inside sort of, you know, polite society, the ability to appeal to the higher power. And we just, you know, in our modern world, don't think that way.
We don't think that way.
Yeah.
You described almost perfectly, you said that's from the first 300 years of
Christianity. I think if you look into Tretia Maria tablet, it's dated somewhere between 43 and 410 AD. But it's just kind of a fun, like, man, I hate you, girl. I'm going to write it down. But it's in ancient language. And someone went to their priest, and the guy's like, yep, got it. Her life, her lungs, her offspring. Yeah.
I got to tell you.
F that girl.
I got to tell you the story. I was living in West Africa. We worked there, as I said. And I had a crush. Where's my wife? Forgive me, baby. But I had a crush just before I got married. I had a crush on a woman that I was going over to her house. This was in the capital, Bamako in Mali. And one day I couldn't find her, but I saw her. I saw her. I was like, there she is in her compound. And so I knocked and called, and as you do in West Africa. And then a grandmother came out. She said, no, she's not here. Nani is not here. I said, I just saw her. So the grandmother went back in, and I went inside of the compound. It's just like a little gate. And I went inside, and I went back where I thought I saw her. And I went into one of the mud huts back there. And there was a guy. He was like doubled over on his knees, a little like sand about a half inch deep football field, like a little mini football field with pictures and candles. And he was doubled over it, and I could only see his back. And he heard me come in, and he turned around. Natalie, he went like, whoa. He like went, whoa, and looked at me like, whoa. And at that second, I looked down, I looked back up, and I got out of there. And what I found out later is he was doing a reading with her because she was trying to decide between me and this French pilot guy. Mm-hmm. And she was trying to decide and discern with this Grangu, this priest, who she should like put a hex on to stop coming to her house. So that is the same stuff. This was, that was in 1990, whatever, 91, I think. That was in 43 AD. And what I'm trying to say is Christianity and the Orthodox, let's just speak with the Orthodox. What they're trying to do is clean that up, but they're not trying to say those spirits don't exist. So like, you see, it sounds like that document you're saying, that lady fully exists, the spirits, fully believes the spirits exist, and she can summon them, which I believe still to this day. I think you can summon the spirit of anger, Natalie. You can hang up and go, that guy
I know
that came
this
on the show
a
is a jerk.
Yeah. Yes.
You can do it. I can do it too. I sit down long enough, I start thinking about somebody, and I suddenly, so I think what that document you describe and what I'm describing is a way of trying to control the mystery, the darkness. And so here's what I want to say, is the darkness on some level has its own reality, and the Orthodox Church and the early Christians believe it, know it, and still say to this day that that darkness, right, can be, let's put it this way, made light. And here's how you do it. All the stuff like she was asking, but she sounds like she was asking for something she shouldn't be asking for. Her priest should say, get behind me, Satan. That's not the stuff we asked for in here. That's what it sounds like to me.
Well, this was Greco-Roman times, and several tablets like this were found that it was just a tradition. It was just, you're pissed off
that's
at
how
someone.
They dealt with.
You just need to come down and, you know, it was a for hire type thing. Like, you don't know how to read, but I'll help you. It was basically a prayer, but you could also curse somebody with the prayer.
So which spirit was she calling on? That's the question.
I don't know, right? I mean, the tablet's real, but... Right. Well, that's an interesting question, right? Because when we look now at the types of energies that are trying to control evil in our world, you know, you can look into a lot of, like, cultish rituals. Epstein clearly was trying to collect energetic artifacts in order to, we don't know what, how far did he go?
Right.
Was he, you know, a student of Aleister Crowley who believes that he summoned a demon through his sex magic? That's
for sure
real. Wait, do you think Aleister Crowley summoned a demon through sex magic?
For sure.
You think that happened? You don't think he said it happened? You think he was able to do it?
Okay, so this is tricky. So I do believe he did that. I do believe that the spirit of, let's call it lust or whatever, was present, and then he was making it more and more present through thoughts, but also activities and actions. So we have to demystify the mystery a little bit. Here's what I mean. So Aleister Crowley at one point has decided to embrace, let's call it, sexual deviancy. Let's call it whatever, right?
Yeah, let's just quickly say who Aleister Crowley was. He was sure. an MI5 British spy mm-hmm. who is probably responsible for most New Age spirituality in our modern world. Yep. He helped to promote tarot and yoga, New Age mysticism. It is use of the magical for your own personal will. It is not like a pilgrimage to a religious site that you're doing for the communal. It's not that. Well, but go ahead. He was a bad dude. He can be found on the cover art of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Yeah.
He's woven into modern day society. And a lot of times people worship him when they think that they're like part of Oprah's New Age book club and they just don't know it. And so I'm going to say like probably one of the worst dudes in modern history.
Definitely.
Like raping young boys, you know, yep. sex magic, bad, bad stuff. And he thinks, and Epstein is the next generation of Aleister Crowley. So I guess what we're getting at here is, what do you think is real there?
Yeah, this is great. You know, there's some evidence, I'm not going to say I know this for a fact, it's just something I learned, that Barbara Bush's mother was a known friend of Aleister Crowley and may yes. have spent some time hanging yeah. out with him.
Yeah,
which is
I just learned
wild.
That recently too.
Yeah.
Gross. So,
yes, it is gross. Here's the way that it could be constructed. Say in let's say by Orthodox Christians or Christians in general, Aleister Crowley is doing, say you and I go on a pilgrimage. We are doing the same thing in that both of us are pursuing a spirit of. And now you got to decide goodness or not. And I think Aleister Crowley on some level probably thinks in calling down certain spirits, however he's doing it, there's different ways to do it. I mean, Epstein built that creepy Egyptian temple. Like that itself, the building is a conjuring and a calling. So if you build a building, somebody's got to go in it or something. Like nobody builds a building and then doesn't put anything in it. So by definition, he was calling things into that building and Crowley was calling things into existence. But I do that too. If I try to go on pilgrimage, because I bought the ticket, I'm calling this pilgrimage closer and closer. I spent the money, which is a store of value, right? In other words, I took valuable things that I have and I gave them to another valuable thing. In other words, I'm demonstrating a type of worship toward, and then I get on the plane. I'm doing all the things to call into existence what I believe to be a good spirit, right? I'm going to the Holy Sepulchre to be where Christ was buried. That is a good place to go. Crowley is doing the same thing. And so when he chooses to invite three women to his house that he knows he's going to try to, I don't know, put under some spell, he's simply calling on a certain spirit to assist him. And I saw this in Haiti when we worked in Haiti. That is what voodoo is. And mm-hmm. you don't have to call it voodoo. It's the pagans of the Christian period were doing the same. All, let's call them traditional faith, work on the same premise, which is I'm going to ask God for the power to get what I want. Mm-hmm. Everybody does this. It's just which power are you calling on? And when you frame it like that, you'll realize you and I today, when we hang up, we're going to go call on some power. The question is which one? And I think if we frame stuff like that, you can start to realize that there's a battle between those who call on the spirits of good or Christ and those who call on the spirits of evil. And I think there is an evil spirit and I think people call on it. For instance, usury. If I'm going to, mm-hmm. Natalie, if you come to me right now, let's say you hang up and you go, hey, John, I don't know, we're struggling, whatever. I don't have any money. So you'd be calling the wrong guy. But if you called me and said, I need this so badly for my daughter. I need this $1,000. Will you please help me? And I gave you $1,000 and then went, pay me back $1,400. I'm a disgusting person. I'm a disgusting person because in your need, I'm capitalizing. That's the spirit of greed, which is not a good spirit. It's a spirit of darkness. I should not be doing that to you. Why am I doing that to you?
Right.
Simply for one reason, I have the power. So I'm using my power. Now, what if you said, fine, I'll do it. And you agree. That doesn't make my actions any better. It makes you desperate. So Christ says, when Natalie calls me for the $1,000, I give her $1,000 and I say, whatever may come. And that's how we're supposed to be. That's calling on a good spirit. And so I think our world is filled with a bunch of people who call on spirits all the time and have lost track of what is good and what is bad. And I think people like you guys, Tucker, and let's call it a secular spirit. Let's call it the interwebs. I think there's a weird thing happening where actually honest people are trying to say something like, yeah, I'm not doing that anymore. And we're not doing that anymore. I could be wrong. Maybe you're a psyop.
Oh, wait, what? What am I not doing anymore?
It could
like
be
new
that,
age stuff. I definitely am not.
It could be that you, I think you're one of the people calling on the beautiful things in life and trying to figure out which spirits to ally with, and the spirits of generosity and hope and joy, right? Which are the spirits of the Holy Spirit, right? I think you're doing that just by your show. I watch it. So,
well, thank you. I just try to ask sincere questions no matter the consequence, but so, I also feel like I'm pissed and pessimistic all the time. So I don't know that I'm calling on the higher good.
By the way, we fall out all the time. I do it too. But I think there's this way of figuring out who's doing what by just listening and watching the fruits of which powers they're calling on. And so anyway, I just wanted to rephrase it because one of the things I was given when I sort of found out about Orthodoxy and was led into the church was orient being East. I was reoriented about what I'm doing every day. And it kind of blew my mind. Like, wow, the old ways are still here. They've always been here. The problem is I didn't know that all things are mystical and spiritual, you know?
So there's a couple ways that you can see this. You know, you can go simplistic as in who are the groups of people who have always been calling on the demons? You know, you can name them. You can say it's a cabal. It's sex magic. It's Masons. It's OTO cults. It's all kinds of things. You can say that. Or you can think of it in reverse as who are the groups being used by demonic energies?
Yes.
And it's really demonic energies at the wheel, not these sex cultists. They're the car. It's the demons at the wheel.
Right.
And so, you know, when you see something like a government trying to make a pilgrimage, you realize that hopefully the people who are making that pilgrimage are being driven by light energy. Or I don't like use that term because that can be Luciferian, like the light workers. So by a higher power that's benevolent, I guess.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, but who, so then what do you specifically believe? Because this kind of thing, you know, I guess you could say would overpower the dark energy, the demonic energy, right?
Yeah, so this is one of the traditions of Christianity is the demons lack a certain kind of power. And I'm no expert on this. I'm not a priest. I'm not a, you know. This isn't my life's work.
Neither. I study geopolitics, but you can only get so far in geopolitics before you realize this is demonic. These are demons. 100%. So that's why I have to ask the questions, and maybe you plant a seed that will lead me somewhere. You don't have to have all the answers. I just want to put you at ease.
Thank you. Yeah. Otherwise, it's going to go badly.
None of us do, right?
I can tell you what I've been taught, and that is that human beings, because of our special place in the created world, so we're special. We have a certain rationality and we have a certain insight as made in God's image that the tree or the rabbit doesn't have. They have a type of soul here, meaning life, but the human soul, the human life form is imbued with divinity, with Christ's divinity. So we have a certain independence where we can actually not be led. In other words, we can be awake enough to recognize good and evil. And so we have the ability, unlike other things in created nature, to not ally with the demons. So the problem is we have to be very clear that we're not in delusion. And one of the ways to be very clear is through deep and ascetic prayer. Because prayer opens up the eye of the heart. In Orthodox theology, it's called the nous. So when my nous is open, I'm not seeing with these eyes, and I'm not seeing with these eyes. I'm pointing down at my crotch. I'm pointing down at my junk, my yeah. desires. I'm seeing with the eye of the heart or the nous, and that is said to be a real thing, as real as your mind, as real as your desires. It's real, but in some ways, we moderns have forgotten that we can see this way. But, and check this out, because it's super interesting, that is a faculty. You know how you say, like, I can see? Some people, they go, I can't see because I'm getting old. Mm-hmm. Well, that faculty has faded. So the faculty of the nous, the ability to see, it has to be tended to. St. Paul talks about, like, to be an athlete, to be an ascetic, to be an athletic person is to run the race, but you have to work out. And so one of the things you work out in the mystical life is the strengthening of your nous through deep prayer, through acts of mercy. And when you do these things, the eye of your heart opens and sees clearly. And now the next time somebody comes to you, like one of these fools on the internet, and somebody says, I'll pay you, you know, $8,000 a post to post on behalf of my nation, that guy can see clearly with his heart that that is a bad idea.
Yeah.
It's a bad idea.
Let's
not because
start there, folks. Yeah.
Like, what they see clearly that, wait, that's just a money play, and money greed doesn't end well. So I'm right. not going to take that bait. But this eye has to be very, it has to be strengthened, and it has to be attended to, just like you can't eat any food you want and go run a marathon. So the idea of the ancient way of thinking of Christianity, which is still the present way, is that you're an athlete. And the question is how do you get strong as a spiritual athlete? You have to exercise. And so that's the deep and profound ritual of prayer. Prayer is not for God. God already knows. Like, God, please help my friend. It's not like God's like, which one? He right. already knows. He's yeah. God. What he's asking you to do is to enter into the arena of prayer so that through prayer you're strengthened in order that you can be one of God's warriors, meaning you can see clearly where the evil is. But we don't really do this very often. We sort of live our life in our head. I've done research and this guy's evil. Well, some people say, I was in prayer last night for 8 hours and this guy's evil. It's because they saw with a different eye, if that yeah. makes any sense.
I've never heard of prayer discussed like that. Like, he's asking you to participate in that way, because of course the higher power would already know.
He knows.
I love that. Yeah. And so I guess.
Sorry.
That's a lot. I wanted to talk about this as a theological discussion, because it's not just a commercial project. It's almost yes. a reckoning yes. of where are we
yes.
as a globe, as a human? Do we respect each other's holy sites? You know, do we understand what people, do we support people when they're doing things like this in order to transcend their lives? Is it possible in a war-torn world? So that was my intention for a conversation like that, and you nailed it. So thank you for being willing to do this with me.
What a nice thing. What a nice thing to be considered. And also, that was my hope too, and we did it. And it was, I don't know. I just see you guys working, and in my world out there in Africa and the places where we work, there's a whole reality that weirdly you guys speak into, because people on the ground are just simple. Local people are just simple. They're yeah. just trying to get to the next day. And what you guys are doing on some level is trying to analyze the swirling powers that be. Like, where are they? And it's really helpful to have people speak into the void and not gaslight us. And so I'm out here. I appreciate it. I don't know if we're finished. I'll keep talking, but I really have enjoyed this very much.
No, I'll let you go. I kept you for about an hour, and hopefully you'll come back another time. We'll talk about other things.
All right, sister. And if you ever want a great party, the best party you can ever have, this Georgian dinner party.
Okay.
Let us know. We had a whole project out here where we're spreading the good news about how to be together. And I thank you for that. We're in Greenville, by the way. If you ever come to Greenville, South Carolina, we have a restaurant for you
okay.
To come and eat. Okay?
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. So have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Take care.